For a new Ford, make it Bill Curry, Tampa Bay's first family of Ford for over 60 years. At Bill Curry, our prices are better than good. They're the best, and they're right up front with our $5,000 best price guarantee. That's right, Bill Curry will meet or beat any Ford dealer's best offer or give you $5,000 cash. Shop our huge selection of new Fords, then get the lowest price, the best price, or we'll give you $5,000 cash. Only at Bill Curry Ford, located on Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
Broadcasting from the ESPN Tallahassee studios in Florida's capital city and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network, this is the Scuttlebucks on 97.9 ESPN Radio. The Scuttlebucks with Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's hometown Ford dealer for nearly 60 years and home of the nationwide lifetime warranty for new and pre-owned vehicles. BillCurryFord.com. Here's ESPN Tallahassee's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
And away we go with the Scuttlebucks. Great to be with you. A little later in the week than usual. You'll have to forgive us. As Tom and myself been under the weather going around these days. But, hey, a delayed Scuttlebucks, probably good for us all, right?
Might have been a Bucks hangover. I don't know what the cause of it was. But it started Sunday night, coincidentally.
Yeah. Let's get moving here. Let's get to it. I'm disillusioned, obviously, the same way that everybody else is. Seems like we're a broken record having this conversation. But my frustrations are growing in different realms. I find myself spending less time on specific players, although I am frustrated by certain players on this team, and more kind of targeting my focus on what has been really a disappointing season from the coaching staff. You know, I think when we look back, Tom, on the season or before the season, the off season, and we highlighted things that kind of encouraged us about, you know, the Bucks' future, and we talked about what we wanted to see, what we thought we'd see, what was possible, what this year could represent. It had a lot to do with the future. It had a lot to do with growth. It had a lot to do with bringing in a two-time coach of the year, a pro's pro, a player's coach, but who would tell it to you straight, tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear, but at the same time had always kind of won over his guys and would have his players back and had won a ton of close games in his career. So you had to figure based on the single score games that single score involved single scores for the outcome, his record in those games being sterling as it was. You just assumed, okay, two-time coach of the year, has the confidence of the players, has their back, wins a lot of close games. His in-game management must be exceptional. His use of personnel must be ideal. He really knows what to say and how to motivate, how to hide weakness. And the truth is, none of that's happened. None of that's happened. He's been lost situationally. He's misused personnel time and again. I don't really get a feel that he has a handle on this team or the game. I think that's the most damning thing I can say to lead off this week's episode is I'm bitterly disappointed in Bruce Arians. I think he's done a terrible job, and I'm not one of these guys who just thinks you should blame the coach for everything. Obviously, this team, even at its optimal level, even if it were, as I like to say, operating at peak efficiency, has terrible flaws. The secondary's not good, no matter who's here coaching. I mean, they don't have enough good players, but they misuse that personnel too. I know there's an article about it on JoeBucksFan.com this week. Guys aren't clearly put in positions to succeed. I mean, Drew Brees on Sunday had the arm of a child. If I'm a Saints fan, they're in desperate shape. It doesn't say much for us, but the truth is their defense is going to have to carry them to this championship they want to win because it ain't going to be Drew Brees.
That front four is good enough.
Yeah, maybe. At some point, you're going to have to throw a forward pass beyond 10 yards. And I don't see it with him, but it's not about the Saints. Back to us. When you know what's coming, when you've witnessed him attempt on third and long two separate passes that didn't get there, that fell short of the receiver and the defender. I mean, just pathetic throws. The kind of throws that if we saw from Jameis, we'd go, oh, this is not good. You know, I mean, we would be alarmed. Well, once that became evident in the first quarter of the game, or second quarter, you pretty much know everything's happening within 20 yards of the line of scrimmage. And yet, they're running ins, slants, crosses, sit-downs basically in a zone. I mean, everything is 10 yards from the line of scrimmage, and guys are running wide open. What are we doing on defense? Why are guys nowhere to be found? You didn't even have to guard the whole field. He doesn't make you guard the whole field, and yet you're still as lost as you would be as if you were facing Russell Wilson or some other elite quarterback. Now, listen, Drew's a Hall of Famer, and he's a smart guy, and he'll use his savvy, and he's accurate, and he's all those things. I'm just talking about arm strength making you guard the whole field. It's not there. We don't adjust the whole game to running stuff in the flats and crossing routes. So just everywhere you look, there are glaring coaching problems. And I'm not the guy that goes, bad coaching, you got out-coached, this coach is terrible, this coach is terrible. But I have no choice right now but to look at this team and say, they are poorly coached. And that's why I'm so bitterly disappointed, because it's the exact opposite of what I thought we'd be talking about at this stage of the season. I knew there would be losses. You knew there would be losses. I thought we'd be talking about the area of personnel that had, you know, that were highlighted each week as getting lit up. Okay, we got to get better here. Let's start looking at the draft. You know, we're winning these games right now because of this, this, and this. If we get better here, here, and here, we're set. Because I didn't think we'd have to be talking about coaching again. But we are. We're talking about coaching. And they'd still have the personnel problems, which is what's going to lead this to being a, whatever, 5-11 season. It makes me sad because, man, some of that is you're really unlucky. You really got unlucky. I mean, I don't know what indicators there could have been that the game could have rapidly passed Bruce by in such a brief period of time, but clearly they didn't show themselves in the interview process. So we thought we were getting the two-time coach of the year, the guy that was sharp, quick-witted, got it from a culture standpoint, could build one, all of that, right? I don't see it. His in-game mistakes, his mismanagement of time, you bring this up a lot. I mean, it's every week. It's every freaking week.
There's another timeout in the first half this week that made no sense.
Of course. It's every week, Tom. He doesn't manage timeouts. He doesn't manage challenges. He doesn't manage time well at all. And I don't think he manages personnel. By the way,
we tried a 55-yard field goal to get it to 10 points. We made it. Matt Gay has been really good.
Yeah.
Pretty much perfect since the Giants missed.
Yeah. By the way.
But, okay, to get it to 10? Congratulations.
Well, I would just say this. You know, we're talking about coaching, so Byron Leftwich, man.
Well, listen, you know, I've learned, and I said this maybe a month ago, I said, I don't know that I can trust Bruce Arians' press conferences. I don't know that I can trust his assessments of things anymore, because half the crap he told us in the preseason just doesn't pan out. Mm-hmm. Like the number one thing, of course, which is this one's going to be tough to overcome, period. Is the secondary is totally fixed. It's totally fixed. Well, he said this week he's ecstatic to have Byron Leftwich as his offensive coordinator. And he said the only time that they commiserate anymore about changes they need to make is in between drives, which I think that's a healthy way of doing things.
I do too.
But if you're going to target Mike Evans and Chris Godwin a total of three times in the first half, something is fatally wrong with your game plan. Something that you can probably see by the end of drive two or drive three that you need to change. Hey, let's draw up our best play for 12. Let's draw up our best play for 13.
Well, these
are things that coaches talk about. It's not just fans in the stand saying,
yeah,
make, you know, draw up your best. Coaches will say post-game, well, we needed to get him the ball. So we decided, all right, let's find the two or three best things that Jameis is comfortable with to getting the ball out in space to our best players.
There's just constant... either backtracking or misleading or odd explanations for the use of personnel on both sides of the ball all the time. And listen, you're talking about an offense every week that you have no idea what you're going to get out of Evans. It's going to be boom or bust with Evans. He's going to be great or missing in action. we've talked about the tight end situation.
Yeah.
Now, some of this is that OJ, I'm about done. I mean, already I'm about done with this guy. I mean,
he's openly fielding, Bruce is openly fielding questions about sports psychology regarding O.J. Howard.
Well,
I mean, but if you're going to do that in a public setting,
not a good idea.
That's, well, game over,
yeah,
right?
You're going to have to go sit down. Yeah. And, well, I mean.
Well, he did. I mean, yeah, you know, he played a little bit, but only the one target, which was in his hands, quickly, off his back.
I mean, he was like the Harlem Globetrotters.
The kind of crap that happens in Madden, you're like, that doesn't happen. I'm turning the system off.
When it happened, I laughed. I'm like, here we go. Let's everybody nationally talk about another Jameis interception. I've counted four this year that have been in his hands that ended up in the opponent's hands. Now, that doesn't excuse the other 14 interceptions, but that's four that are not on him at all. At all. Got a couple of other unlucky ones there. But, you know, listen, how many times are you going to be down 13, 15, 18, 21, 20, 17 points to start a game? Yeah. You have dictated terms, meaning in a negative way. You have no chance to succeed. If you're trying to evaluate your quarterback and you're down by two scores every week, good luck, because they're going to tee off. They know you have to throw. They know what's coming.
Yeah, the thing that that's hard for me is, how can you have these two guys on the outside and everything looks so hard?
Everything looks difficult.
It was the same thing with Dirk. You know, the offense, it felt like, good God. And some of it, obviously, is Jameis not being able to lift the lid on the defense. Finally, a good throw down the sidelines to Scotty Miller. Looks like Scotty might actually be fast. You know, yeah. The last time we tried to run that play against New Orleans, he was bottled up, and it was never a good idea from leaving his hand.
It was a perfect throw.
This time, well, it's about damn time. But if he does that a little bit more, maybe things get a little bit easier. But still, you're just talking about...
He had Evans on 1-2 earlier this year, and he just dropped it.
He did.
I mean, he's had a few of those.
He's had like 20 overthrows in that situation.
Oh, without question. That's his weakness. I'm just saying, when he does throw it there, they oftentimes don't cash it in.
But the problem is, from Cutter to this offense, and I don't know that it's the common denominator is simply Jameis, but everything looks so damn hard. I mean, could you imagine a situation where you run the ball, I mean, you ran it 8 times for the game. Jameis had 2 of them. So run the ball like 2 or 3 times in the first half with a running back.
Think
right?
about that.
And you only have 3 targets to Godwin and Evans at the half?
So what are we doing? Well, we're throwing to Brate.
14 times,
yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
That's the tied for the most targets in a game with Godwin.
Hey, want to mention this, though. So you talk about the running game. If we're going to continue to bitch about coaching in the opening segment, what are we doing at the 1 yard line? Can we stop being in the shotgun at the one? Secondly, why is your best running back not on the field? Why are you giving it to a third string fullback? What are you doing?
I have no idea.
What are we doing? And then you're going to ask him to throw a fade, which, listen, if you want to talk about a route Jameis can't throw, it's a fade. He's never thrown it well. He threw it terrible here at Florida State. He throws it terrible in the NFL.
Yeah.
You got a 7-foot wide receiver, and you always underthrow the fade. So anyhow, that drives me nuts. But you know that. Don't call that play.
The problem here is I expected a loss this past weekend.
Yeah,
but
the way it happened is so.
But you thought, for me, I thought you get the win over Arizona, and it was a bit flukish towards the end there. But you get the win. Then you've got Atlanta, Jacksonville, Indy, Detroit.
Well, Atlanta's playing well now. You're gonna lose.
Here's the problem. This weekend's the problem. This game is the problem. Since we're doing a Friday version of this, looking forward a little bit more than reacting past, Atlanta is trending in the right direction.
Ooh.
I watched this game against Carolina at the same time I was at a place where all the games are on.
Yeah, they dominated Kyle Allen.
My God.
He looked
My
awful.
God.
Yeah.
That defense has come alive. The talking point up there in Atlanta is, guess what? Raheem Morris went from wide receivers coach. They asked him to help out on defense. Dan Quinn enlisted his help, and things have seemed to turn around. They're playing inspired, and this is in that building. Dirk Cutter's got an axe to grind against our god-awful defense.
Well,
this has the writings, man, of
yes.
Here we go. But next week actually being the one, the damning week. This one is disheartening, but if you get the win over ATL, you're not in the basement again in the division. But everything that people who love to hate the Bucs are waiting for could be coming next week after we lose on Sunday. That's what this feels like.
The only thing I would say about the game on Sunday is Jameis has really played well against Atlanta.
He better bring it. That defense has come to life.
Let's hope that the trend of him playing exceptionally well against Atlanta continues. You know, I have a greater fear here too, and it may just be sometimes, Tom, and I know we gotta move through here and move on to the next segment, but sometimes, you know, a change of scenery, as they say in baseball, You know, I think we're moving to that, unfortunately.
We'll be fans of a tip.
No.
Just messing around.
I want to explore what I was going to get into later in the show on this, but it may very well be time. Scuttlebuck, stay with us.
Shopping for a used F-150, a car, or an SUV? Find Tampa's biggest and best used inventory at Bill Curry Ford, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Shop now at BillCurryFord.com and see the nationwide lifetime warranty on pre-owned vehicles. Now, here's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
And that means our man, Lita Kemper, JoeBucksFan.com. The website is set to join us. Before we go to the phone lines and welcome them in, I know you heard the liner there, but let me remind you, Black Friday shopping has already kicked off at the great Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford for the past 60 years. You can lease a new 2020 Ford Explorer XLT for just $287 per month. That's with 0% financing. Including the new 2019 Ford Ranger, by the way, in that mix. Shop and get all the details right now at BillCurryFord.com. Black Friday offers do expire on December the 2nd, so let's get with it, people. BillCurryFord.com. All right, let's welcome him in now. Lita Kemper joins us on the Skoda Bucks. Hello, Lee. How are you, brother?
Jeff, thanks for bringing me in. I appreciate it, and thanks for the Bill Curry read.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, we appreciate Bill Curry. We appreciate Sean Sullivan. We appreciate the sponsorship and the relationship. And I appreciate you, buddy, helping us get through this very difficult season yet again.
Yeah, I hate to be Debbie Downer, but you know what? And this is a sobering thought. The Bucks have to go 500 the rest of the way, 3-3 the final six games, in order to have a better record than they did in the last two seasons of Dirk Cutter. And I don't know if this is a 500 team, to be honest with you, especially the way Atlanta has revived themselves. And maybe, just maybe, Dan Quinn could have saved his job. I don't know if I'd go that far, but there's some talk about that. And if you're the Glazer, family, and you're thinking to yourself, we went through all this hassle, spent all this money on coaches, talk the coach out of retirement, and we're no better than we were from step one. That's got to be disheartening.
Oh, buddy, it's more than disheartening. I tell you what, it seems to me we got the senile version of Bruce Arians. We didn't get that.
Well, I'll tell you what. Before the season, there was a report out that the Glazers were they were getting cold feet about Bruce Arians because Arians was insistent on hiring Byron Leftwich, his offensive coordinator. And the Glazers' line of thinking was, wait a minute, we're paying for Arians, and instead we're going to get Leftwich? And they sort of had cold feet. And it turns out, I dare say it turns out that their premonition or fears have come true.
I think they have. And I was hesitant to dip my feet in those waters because I understand that when you're going through transition, a lot of things can look off. You got a lot of people who need to get on board and to pull in the same direction. You got young players, new players mixing with veterans and a new offense and a different philosophy. So I give folks a wide berth in that first year, whether it's a college coach typically or a pro coach, understanding that they're pros, understanding that we should see progress, understanding that as the year goes on, you ought to get better. It may not look pretty, but there ought to be signs by season end that things are getting in line. I don't see it. I don't see it at all. I see the same sorts of mistakes every week. Mismanagement of the clock, mismanagement of timeouts, mismanagement of challenges, misuse of personnel, poor play calling in the red zone. I'm perpetually perplexed with what I see from a coaching staff that, frankly, as the season began, I had high hopes for. I think we all did. I thought we were getting the two-time NFL Coach of the Year, meaning the guy that won that award, called the plays accordingly, was able to capture the players' attention, get them to buy in, create culture in a locker room. I don't see any of it right now. And, you know, there's just a feeling of hopelessness in Tampa. And I know you know that. And it's so heartbreaking because it sounds a little bit like we're beating a dead horse, but it's really tough to do the evals of players. And we're in the midst of trying to figure out whether Winston's a franchise quarterback for this group or not. We're really trying to decide on certain player personnel and areas of strength and weakness. And I don't know that each week we're getting the best opportunity to do that because the coaches are not putting the players in the best possible position to succeed.
You're absolutely right. And if someone put a gun to my head and asked me, where have you seen improvement? There's only been one area, and it's almost an indictment rather than an improvement. The past month, Leftwich has had an epiphany that he can use tight ends. You're allowed to use tight ends. You're allowed to get tight ends into the game. But that's also an indictment. Like, why did it take you until the end, until you're out of the playoffs, to figure out, oh, my gosh, I've got two tremendously talented tight ends. Maybe I should throw them the ball more than I should throw to Scotty Miller or Breshad Perriman. And by the way, Breshad Perriman and Scotty Miller, two of the three worst receivers in the NFL for catch percentage. Two of the three worst. Perriman's the worst. Miller's the third worst. But yeah, let's get these guys on the field and make sure we throw them the ball all the time. Never mind that we've got Evans. Never mind that we've got Godwin. Never mind that we have O.J. Howard, even though he does like to give up the ball to the other team, volleyballs it. Let's get a break. Forget about those guys. Let's target the worst receivers in the NFL. And that just drives me crazy.
Well, I mean, Tom and I were talking about it in the opening segment. When your game plan is we're going to abandon the run, so we're not going to run the football at all. I mean, for the game, where they have eight carries. I mean, they're not running the football. So I understand they got down early. They get down early every – I almost cursed. They get down early every week. So you have that. I got it. But with no semblance of balance, you got no chance to throw the ball successfully and consistently because everybody knows what's coming and they're going to tee off on you. And you got an average offensive line at best. And by the way, not only are you then going to have to throw excessively because you've abandoned the run, well, then that would lead one to believe that Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, are going to get a lot of the targets given their talent level. But those two combined in the first half were targeted three times. What are we doing? Breshad Perriman's terrible.
You set the table for me here. You really did. First about Peyton Barber. When Peyton Barber's on the field, it's first down. Do we have any doubt that Leftwich is going to call his number out the middle? I mean, it's almost a guarantee. And Leftwich got upset with me, not this week, but last week. I asked him about that. I said, do you think you're telegraphing plays right with Peyton Barber out there running up the middle on first down? And Leftwich just glared at me. He's like, no. Well, I think half the stadium knows it's coming. And if half the stadium knows it's coming, I'm going to guess defensive coaches know it's coming too. That's number one. But number two, specifically to your point, Mike Evans after the game said the Saints had the exact same coverages on him Sunday as they did the previous meeting in New Orleans. Leftwich, what are you watching? Number one, Marcus Lattimore was out of the game.
Yeah.
You didn't have to worry about him. He always gets in Evans' head. You didn't have to worry about him. They're running the same coverages. Didn't you look at the previous film and try to devise some sort of game plan in order to get Evans open? I mean, come on. What's going on here?
Well, I mean, I think that's the fitting into this little discussion about the coaching staff is what's going on here. And I don't, by the way, I hate leaving people bereft of hope. I also refuse.
Yeah.
I also refuse to inject enthusiasm and false hope into a conversation where it need not exist or there's no evidence that it should. So the problem we have is that this episode of the Scuttlebucks and any conversation surrounding the Bucks right now is bound to leave fans bereft of hope. Because there isn't an area that you can point to besides the run defense, which has been exceptional. There's not an area that you can point to where you say, I feel really good this Sunday about this. No, I don't.
That's true.
Every game that I sit down to watch, I think, well, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, and this is going to happen. And they're all negative traits that I'm pointing to, and it always does. And so, you know, listen, Atlanta now believes, for whatever reason, they now believe, as you laid it out there, and this feels like a massacre coming. And it may not happen. Jameis has played well historically against Atlanta, so maybe we get into a shootout. I don't know. We're surely not going to stop them from scoring, given their weaponry on offense. And we don't stop bad teams from scoring, so we're sure as hell not going to stop that team from scoring. So I don't know, buddy. You got to win this week in 40-37 or something. I mean, this is absurd.
Well, that's, you know, and that's why the people that want to run Jameis out of town and talk about all his interceptions, all that. And I said, look, the guy knows from the moment he steps out of the locker room that secondary of the Bucs is so terrible that he has to hang a minimum of 35 points on the scoreboard or this team doesn't have a prayer. Of course, I mean, he's going to be forced in place. Who wouldn't? That's number one. Number two, and I hate to, I don't want to try to walk on your narrative here. There is a little bit of hope, but not for this year. But for next year, well, maybe not. But at any rate, I firmly believe, I'm not BSing, I never do. I firmly believe if the Bucs had just an average secondary, this team would be in a wild card hunt. I really believe it. I really believe this team would be near 500, if not over 500, if they had just a mediocre secondary. I really believe that.
Yeah, but they don't, and my point would be...
They sure don't.
They don't, and my point would be that the same guy that drafted these players, that put us in this situation, is going to be in charge of finding the new players to replace the players that he's already drafted that failed. So,
pretty soon, you know, I know where you're going. Light got an extension. We don't know the details of that extension. That's never been released. And as far as we know, that could be just a series of one-year contracts. It could be very heavily cited to the Glazers, all kinds out. The only people that know about that contract are Light's agent, and Arian. Oh, and of course the Glazers. So I know where you're going with that, but I'm just being honest here that we don't know that Jason's locked in for the next 5 years. Jason Light, Bucks general manager. And if the Bucks, you know, if they lose out, all bets are off who's coming back, if anyone's coming back.
Always appreciate the conversation, brother. We successfully left people with no hope.
Bereft, as you would say.
Yeah, bereft of hope. Good talking to you, brother. Be well.
Hey, Jeff, have a good, happy Thanksgiving, guys.
You do the same, brother. All right, that's Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com. Let's come back and react to that, Tom. It's the Scuttlebucks.
Just checking my microphone once as I test your audio. Increase the bass response, hoping the speakers blow.
Shopping for a used F-150, a car, or an SUV? Find Tampa's biggest and best used inventory at Bill Curry Ford, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Shop now at BillCurryFord.com and see the nationwide lifetime warranty on pre-owned vehicles. Now, here's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
Yeah, another reminder, don't miss out. Black Friday shopping, it's already kicked off at Bill Curry Ford. Bucks fans, prices at Bill Curry Ford are better, than good. They're great. They're the best. It's all backed by their $5,000 best price guarantee. Get shopping now at BillCurryFord.com or at the easy-to-get-to showroom there, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. I was just by Raymond James Stadium last weekend. On Dale Mabry, and don't forget their nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. Mention Scuttlebucks or Joe Bucks fan and general manager, our friend Sean Sullivan, and he'll give you a special discount. Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford. So the suck fest continues this weekend for the Bucks, and let's hope that we see something that stuns us, because that would be, to me, really, really, really out of character. It would be like when we beat the Rams, coming off the Giants loss, going out to L.A., setting records, throwing up 55 points. That was stunning. That was out of character for the Bucks to buck up after a bitterly disappointing loss and go win a game like that against a good team and a good front. That was a pleasant surprise. This, too, would be a shocking development. Atlanta's playing well. The Bucks have nothing to play for. Question marks about the coaching staff, inconsistent play, to say the least, from the quarterback, frustrations mounting on yet another lost season. If they somehow rise up and beat Atlanta, I'll be very surprised.
I'm here to tell you that the offense is totally fixed. It's totally fixed. I would say this about this weekend's game, and you know what Atlanta has seen I think we're only awakening to the fact that Drew Brees doesn't have the downfield threat, right?
No.
And they may have been alerted to that in game, because I remember watching the flow of that game as a Drew Brees fantasy owner and saying, oh, well, they haven't had the ball. So once they get the ball,
they'll be okay once they get the ball, right?
And then the third quarter comes and it's about 6 minutes to go. I'm going, oh, they're really not going to do a damn thing today.
No.
That's not good. Then it's Kyle Allen the next week for Atlanta. This is a different animal. I understand you want to, you know, throw out the 18 interceptions. That's fine. But James could get the ball to good receivers in time. He can get it down the field.
He should defend the whole field, yes.
I would imagine this weekend the offense is going to look good enough that it pisses us off all the more. I don't know if we're going to win, but I think it's going to be a game plan that obviously involves Evans and Godwin a whole lot more. How could it not, folks? How could it not? But the one thing that's important, too, just as a context clue for how this thing spiraled out of control on Sunday, we had the ball for like a minute in the first quarter.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you went three and out, and they had 22 plays to your three or whatever it was.
You had the ball for a minute, so you're behind the eight ball, and then it's 20 to nothing in the middle of the second quarter. It doesn't excuse the fact that Ronald Jones gets six bleeping touches the entire game, but I don't even know what the distribution count was all about this weekend. I mean, you've got Scotty Miller with as many targets as Chris Godwin. You got Evans with eight targets, most of them late in the game. You got Cambrate with 14, and you've got six traditional runs. And two of those are to Daria Gumbawale. So who the F knows?
On the one. You can't put your best running back. If there was a time to put Peyton Barber in, it might be that one. He actually does have a nose.
He's your best
in there.
Well, considering the run, he creates space where there was none against the Cardinals the week before. One would think that film would reinforce you.
This is the misuse of personnel. And the thing is, also, by the way, how many times are we going to put he's 6'4", 240 plus pounds. Why is he in a shotgun on the 1 yard line? What the hell are we doing? You know whose old ass sneaks it from the one every week? That's right, Tom Brady. Rickety-ass Tom Brady finds his way into the end zone on a sneak every time they get down there. Is he in the shotgun? God, no, because why would you be? Yep. And then secondly, when we do put him in the shotgun, what happens? Dumbass snaps it while he's in the middle of audibling. It happens every time.
Well, and where I deliver at least a line or two of hope again, I get it. I'm disheartened by the fact that consistently, it's almost like Chris Ricks up here in those days. You feel like there's 3 to 7 points on the board against you. And that's before I even get into Winston's inconsistencies, because when he's bad, maybe there's 10 points against you on the board.
Oh, yeah, when he's bad,
14
he's real bad.
Points against you when you combine him and the coaching staff with what they're doing, creating possessions for the opposition, mismanaging timeouts and clocks and all that stuff. But I will say in this case, that PI call is unbelievably nonsense. The ball is not out of Jameis Winston's hands. It's within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage.
It's within a yard.
Moreover, my man is lined up a yard offsides pre-snap. Well, what the hell is a line judge doing?
Well, but they've already proven that they are not going to, when they go to the home base to have this review, they're not going to overturn anything. They've decided to extend middle fingers to the NFL, because they've decided they don't like that interference is reviewable. And so they've decided we're not going to overturn anything.
But that's not even pass interference.
No,
that's like a rule about a screen and the depth of where the ball is relative to the line of scrimmage.
There is no pass interference within a yard of the line of scrimmage.
The ball's not in the air. It can't possibly. For two reasons, it's not pass interference.
Mike Evans got called for that because he's bigger and stronger than the guy he bitched. That's
an incredible play. That's one that you should pound your chest and say, that's a man playing football.
Well, yeah, it's a grown man playing football. That's why he got called.
But then beyond that.
Also,
beyond that.
With Drew Brees are the golden boy. They're not going to let us make that.
From the official's point of view, the line judge's point of view, and I'm done with line judges. You know what? Let's just put lasers on the field and be done with it. The football is behind the ass of the corner. Think about that.
I know.
Imagine that. The football is behind the butt of the corner at the line of scrimmage, and you're not going to throw a flag for offsides?
Listen,
it's
just an added frustration.
The game is within reach at that point.
Yes, it is.
So despite all of this garbage.
Right?
It's like the last time we played the Saints. The line of scrimmage in that game, within three drives for either side, you go, oh, my God.
We can't block them.
Yet it's 24-17, and you've got a chance to go down the field and tie the game late.
Yeah. No, I know.
So that's where I deliver the hope, and I'd say it's within reach. And then you look at the Tennessee and the New York Giants games, and that should have been Buccaneers victories for very simple and obvious reasons.
And Winston played well in those games.
Right. I'm not saying you'd be a playoff team this year. Well, I understand that you'd be in the hunt column for the wild card.
But the NFC's so good right now, you'd have no real chance.
You've got to win 11, 12 games. But you're not that far away. The problem is I just don't see the path to being more competently coached. Given what we're looking at.
Well, they're all coming back, I would imagine, unless they lose out, like Lee said, but I don't see it. Hey, listen, hold on. We got to do this, though, because I know we only have limited time.
Is it a Bill Curry Ford read?
I just read one.
I know.
But what I'm going to tell you is this. I want to go back to what I said. Sometimes a change of scenery may be good. If I were Winston's agent, I might almost start to try to engineer a way out because he could probably use a break. Now,
yeah, but who's going to give him a chance to start?
Well, I think people see in him, this is why he's continually rolled out there and why people refuse to cut the cord. So they cut the cord on Mariota in Tennessee. Why? Well, because he wouldn't throw the ball down the field. He began to lose his accuracy, and he's oft hurt. These are three things that add up in a hurry to you not being able to play.
If he doesn't get a starting opportunity, watch him land in Atlanta. I think there's a certain offensive coordinator that would love to have Marcus Mariota as his backup quarterback.
Sure. You know, good luck with that, buddy. Here comes a bunch of checkdowns and poorly thrown ones at that. Here's what I'd tell you. Winston would latch on somewhere where they need a quarterback and they had a sturdy offensive line and they could allow for him. Listen, every game is 10 to nothing before he gets the ball. Let's just say it. You're putting yourself in a position now where you're going to force the football. They know what's coming. You're going to be under duress. And he's interception prone anyhow. So we are adding elements. We're putting gas on a fire. We're not giving him an opportunity to play from in front. We don't give him an opportunity to play conservatively. He can never play conservatively. We have to throw to catch up all the time. So these
the way you want him to play is impossible because
you're down 13-0.
If you're okay with losing 34-13, then he could play the way you want him to play. Yeah.
Okay. So one of two things would happen if I'm his agent. If I'm his agent, I say, let's get the hell out of here. This is a poorly run organization. The worm has turned here. They're never going to like you. Let's move on. Or I'm going to say this, Jameis, screw him. I know you want to win, man. Part of what makes you and why we love you is because you refuse to go down without a fight. You are going to swing until they take you away in an ambulance, which is a great trait. You want that guy next to you, but here's the deal. It's killing your stats because when the whole world knows you're throwing and they play off coverage and then they bring heat, you're dead in the water, my man. Yep. You have to force it.
It was 51-8 pass to run this past week.
He's got no chance, 51-8.
So that's unheard of.
It's dumb, but we do stuff like this all the time. So here's what I would tell him. I don't care. Check it down. You won't throw another interception this year. You may not complete a 40-yard pass again this year either. Check it down. Just take all your sorry-ass five-yard gains, like we see so many of these quarterbacks whose statistics look better because they'll check it down all day. Well, Jacoby Brissett on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. Man, what the hell is that? Check down. No interceptions? Of course not. You're not going to throw one if you don't try to fit one in 30 yards downfield. You also won't make big plays.
Well, the one thing I'd say is I think there'd be a few big plays for about 3 weeks because the league would have to adjust.
What's going on here?
Jeez, he's actually taking it?
Well, just do it. Do not throw an interception. If it's even close, just eat it. Eat the sack. Live to fight another day, punt, and when you're down 28-7 because you haven't taken any shots downfield, you haven't made him defend the whole field, and now you're down because your defense can't get stops either, guess what? Just get buried because guess what they won't do? They won't blame you for all the interceptions. They'll have to talk about all the other things wrong with this team.
Yeah, I think the hard part here, too, is if you're not in the offensive meetings and you're not able to know for a fact what play is called or what rules that everybody has.
Right.
It's hard to reconcile who's at fault for a play like the interception to Evans where he cuts in and runs
the post. Look at him looking at each other.
And Jameis is looking for a fly. It does happen every week.
Every week they look at each other, him and Godwin, him and Evans. They're looking at each other like, is it you or is it me? Like, that's proof that they're still not sure what they're doing in this offense. Now, that's inexcusable because we're in week whatever, but
it's also inexcusable because these are professionals.
Right. And by some point, somebody's got to get on the same page. I agree. But sometimes I wonder. I said this to you earlier in the week. Is 3 the only one that knows the offense? Or vice versa? Is he the only one that doesn't?
Right.
Because that's
one or the other. He's got miscommunications with Godwin on a couple of picks. The one where Bruce Arians is furious after the game is over, saying none of those interceptions are on him. And then you've got Mike Evans this weekend. You've got O.J. Howard. Remember the hot – well, I know. I can't even say the name.
Okay, yep.
But you've got that at number 80 out in London. As the hot, right? Uh-huh. And he's not turned around for the football.
He's not ready for the football to be there.
He's
not situationally aware, Tom. Right.
Well, couldn't you say that a receiver running the wrong route or a quarterback delivering the ball to the wrong spot would be situationally not aware
Correct.
Of what your rules are?
So my guess is this. Based on we covered the man here and we talked to an offensive savant. Now, that doesn't make him a great coach, but Jimbo Fisher, anybody that's ever had a chance to sit down with him, would never question his acumen for the game. I mean, that guy can song and verse. Every offense that's ever been run.
If there was a Wunderlich-like test for offensive acumen.
Highest score ever recorded.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, so what did he tell us every time we ever talked about it? Smartest quarterback he ever coached. Quickest to learn an offense. Quickest to understand all of the varying and nuanced reads and why, right? So my guess is, Tom, those guys don't know what the hell they're doing based on side adjustments. They're not making side adjustments, receivers and tight ends. They're not making side adjustments.
Yeah, I'd lean that way as well, given what I know about Jay Boutte. Now, there are times where he makes a throw.
Like, sometimes and it's just inaccurate.
Or it's in a triple. Like, for
example, those are easily discernible.
Right.
Like, when you see those, you know who that's
on. What the hell are you doing?
Right.
And we're the first to say, what the hell are you doing?
That's when it's his decision. But I'm telling you, of the 18, you've got four that were in Howard's hands.
Yeah.
So dismissed, there's 14. And at least, I mean, according to Arians himself, at least 5 to 6 that are just wrong routes.
He's saying it's 10 legitimate interceptions so far this year.
Right. But the point is, it just that takes away from the larger discussion whether there should be 18 or 2. I don't care.
The hard part I have with this is Bruce, the message to Jameis is consistent. And Jameis lauds Bruce for this. He says, cut it loose. But if you don't know where your guys are going to be, how can you cut it loose?
You can't, but he still does.
You have to guess at that point. And I think that's what's happening at times. It looks like we're guessing that I've got to trust he's going to be there. He may not be, and this could be a house call. But I got to trust that my man knows that based upon the way the safety rolls over, he's going to run a fly and he's not going to cut in for a post. I mean, listen, well, and you know what? I brought up Godwin and Evans, but I'm forgetting Perryman.
Oh, well.
He wanted to murder Perryman.
Well, I want to murder Perryman. Let's not talk about him anymore. He can't play. There's a reason he was available. He can't play.
There are disputes about Jameson crime in the past. I will say there is no dispute he wanted to murder Perryman.
I would, too. The guy's dropped a couple touchdowns this year. He's never in the. He doesn't have any field awareness.
At least when Scotty Miller steps out of bounds, he's a rookie, you know, and he's the game's moving so fast for him. He's doing things out of character. Although he does look better the last couple of weeks.
There's hope for him.
I do think breaking back on the ball 2 weeks ago against Arizona, that was a throw behind him. He adjusts to it. He makes the catch.
But about to get beheaded. Yes,
correct. I think that was it for him. He was like, oh,
I got
okay.
It
well, looks like he,
there's a trust developing. And you know when our guy trusts somebody, he's going to go to him over and over and over again. See, great. But
but it's a different trust than Humphreys, who is the guy we miss the most.
We
in
do
this
miss
offense.
Him. We do. Yeah. I don't know.
There's been a hell of a week, hasn't
there's
it?
Nothing to add to this. God, dog it, man. I swear.
That's the problem is you're done with him because of last week. That was the final straw. The way it looks, the process of it all.
The whole thing. The whole thing, yeah.
I think this is the one for most Bucs fans. It's the one for me. First of all, I hate Atlanta. Second of all, if that team that was dead and they were going to fire their coach before Thanksgiving wins their third in a row and they're trending in the right direction and we look as hapless as the last two opponents they have vanquished in this division, oh, God. I mean, just Katie bar the door. Next week's episode.
I'll let you rant.
It's going to be silence.
Yeah.
And the rest is silence. We'll play music for 40 minutes, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford.
You can cue it up and I'll just go, good work out of you. Thanks to Lita Kemper. Thanks to Bill Curry Ford, Sean Sullivan, and all of you for listening to the program. We'll be back. Another inspiring edition of the Scuttlebucks next week. Go Bucks.